This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha.
Jakeem understands really what death is now. You all have definitely dropped the ball. You definitely make it hard for youth, you know, to trust you or anyone to trust you. I felt like you should have lied.
STLPR has been running an investigative series this week focused on the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department and homicides, namely the department's failure to solve more than 1,000 homicide cases in the past decade. The joint investigation from St. Louis Public Radio, APM Reports, and the Marshall Project found that the rate of unsolved cases owes to, quote, shoddy detective work, staffing shortages, and eroding community trust. It also found a disparity in which cases were solved. Of the roughly 1,900 people killed in St. Louis over the last decade, over 90%, or about 90%, were Black victims. Yet police solved less than half of those homicide cases, compared with two-thirds of cases with victims who are white. Whitney Brown was killed in a drive-by shooting in 2015. Her case is among the 1,000-plus that remain unsolved by St. Louis police. And Erica Jones, her mother, joins us now to talk about what she's done in the past 8 years since her daughter's murder to try to get some answers and why she started a group, Voice for the Voiceless, or Voice of the Voiceless, to help fellow St. Louisans who have lost loved ones to gun violence. Erica, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you. I appreciate it being here.
First of all, I realize that it's been years, but of course there's still pain, so I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Erica, let's start with your daughter, Whitney. What was Whitney like, and where was she in life back in 2015?
Whitney was a first-time mom of a five-year-old. She was going to school to be a nurse. She wanted to be a NICU nurse, So she was in school for that. She also worked two jobs. She worked for Walmart and FedEx. Mm-hmm. She was a very, very ambitious woman. She loved life. Her main priority was her son. Mm-hmm. She kept family first with everything that she did. She was basically like the mother hen of her siblings. You know, especially her youngest sister, making sure that she graduated, making sure that she was doing the right thing when it came to her middle sister, making sure that she was taking care of her daughter. She was just a ball of life. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, any parent would have loved, you know, to have a child like her.
Right. I mean, when we talk about numbers, we so often fail to recognize that they're not merely numbers. Whitney was someone who was so beloved and important to so many people. So, Erica, when you learned that she had been killed, I mean, what was it that you thought about first?
It's not true. Mm. It was so many emotions, but that was the first thing. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even put things together. Like what happened, or I couldn't even think. I was in like, I felt like a whirlwind was in my mind.
And you mentioned your grandson, mm-hmm. Whitney was a first-time mom, mm-hmm. Jakeem. Jakeem was just 6 years old.
Five years old.
When Whitney was killed. You adopted him.
Yes.
And are helping to raise Jakeem. In these years, I mean, how is it that you have talked with Jakeem about his mother, especially on those days he really misses her? Mm-hmm.
What a lot of people don't understand that when you are a mother, has lost your child and you have grandchildren, your emotions is different from how they feel, Especially trying to express, you know, the hurt of not being able to see her, hear her, talk to her, hold her, love on her, you know, congratulate her, walk her through things in life that she should have been able to be a part of. For a long time, the job where I worked, Jakeem, we used to pass by Bourne's Jewish Hospital. And he was like, he would always be like, "Nana, can we go in there and see mommy?" He, for years, he thought she was still in the hospital.
Right.
But, you know, he's a baby. He he really doesn't understand what it is.
Right. And Jakeem is now 14.
Correct.
He just graduated from middle school last week. Congratulations. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I mean, it must have been hard to reach that milestone without Whitney being with you physically. How has your daughter's passing affected you and the rest of your family?
It's difficult. It's difficult. You never know what day or what you're going to get from day to day. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what their attitudes is going to be like. You don't know what their response is going to be. We actually just got her headstone down.
Oh, okay.
Due to the COVID and due to the bag up, we just now getting her headstone down.
Mm-hmm.
We worked very hard to get it, you know, put up. But the first time that my grandson actually was able to go and see that down, he's been plenty of times before, that hit the family like a rocket.
Mm.
Everything was totally different. All my children and grandchildren just came and laid in my bed after they went because they was trying to understand. It's years later,
mm-hmm.
and Jakeem understands really what death is now.
Right.
What it means to not have my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen my grandson that distraught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not hearing her see her. So we talk about her. We, you know, reminisce. We watch videos. We, you know, do things that she used to love doing to make them laugh and things like that. But it's tumultuous
right.
for a child to have to understand that their mother is not coming back.
So understanding that very personally, as the mother of someone who's lost a child to gun violence,
mm-hmm.
Helping to raise Jakeem, who's grappling with the loss of his mother, you know, even now, will continue into the future. And one of the ways that you've worked through your loss is by founding Voice of the Voiceless, which is a nonprofit support group,
mm-hmm.
right? And as you're helping families grieve the loss of loved ones, very specifically because of gun violence, what is the sort of support that's necessary for those after that kind of loss?
Well, a lot of people, what they don't understand is a lot of people try to compare,
mm-hmm.
you know, losing a mom or a dad or a sibling. And I try to get people to understand, please understand that there's a difference. You know, not to be, you know, empathetic or, you know, don't sympathize or empathize with them. But losing a child is totally different than losing a mom or dad. You know, so me creating Voice of the Voiceless STL basically was an entity that I felt was very much needed because I didn't see any organizations out here that catered to mothers losing a child. I knew of one, and God rest her soul, that I respect this woman with, you know, with every fiber of my being. And she passed away about 2 years ago, was Diane Culpepper.
Mm-hmm.
And she did the Vigilant every year, end of the year, and they would give the names of all those who lost their lives in the city of St. Louis and surrounding areas every year. And they would have the fire trucks and different things out there. So to emulate her, you know, and they used to call me the mini-me of her. So I don't think I could ever fill those shoes because she was a great woman.
Right.
You know, but to be inspired to say, hey, I can help you. You know, I understand your grief. I understand your loss, your pain, what it is that you're going through, and you don't have to be by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's other mothers like us.
Yeah. Does that vigil continue?
With the cult? Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it does. Miss Sharon Webb is the person that had took over now.
Mm-hmm.
And she is also one of the women who is actually in my documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
Oh, tell us about the documentary.
I have a documentary. It's called Voice of the Voiceless. You can find it on YouTube. It's trailer 1, 2, and 3, but it's also the whole entity of it, Voice of the Voiceless STL. And basically talks about at least 5 of us mothers who have lost children. Sharon Webb was one. She lost her daughter to gun violence. She was one of the first young Black women who was used as a shield and was murdered. Ms. Sharon Williams, she used to work for the Demetrius Johnson Foundation. She lost her son. Ms. Toni Taylor, she lost her son, Kerry Ball Jr., to police gun violence. He was shot over a series of numbers of times, but he was also. And then you have Ms. Ramona Fortner. She lost not only one, but 2 children, who was a basketball player. And she lost him to gun violence. So all of us mothers got an idea to come together, and we created that documentary to let other mothers, you're not alone. You're not by yourself.
Right. And that's 5 too many.
Yes.
Mothers and so many more.
It's, I mean, 1 too many.
There are a lot of nonprofits that center on gun violence in the city, and many that you've been involved with. Mm-hmm. What kinds of city-provided services do you wish existed for gun violence prevention specifically, and then also for, you know, gun violence victims and their families?
Mm-hmm. There are very few. One is Mothers of an Angel that was created by Mike Brown's wife, and we call
Mike Brown's mother?
Mike Brown's wife.
Oh,
yes,
okay. This
is Cal Brown.
Sure. Mike Brown Sr.'s.
Yes.
Sure.
So that was created, Mothers of an Angel. So when I don't have mine, to give me a peace of mind, I go, and, you know, in support of her. You also have Hugs that was created by Tam Coleman that deals with mothers and children of grieving families to gun violence. It's not really a lot. You have Carrie on the Ball that was created by his mother, Toni Taylor. She's TNT on social media. But it's not a lot that, you know, that we have for mothers. If it was a lot, I think you'll see more turnout, you know, when it comes to news, radio, newspapers, meetings. There's not a lot.
Right. And is there anything that you would want the city of St. Louis specifically to provide? I think some of these organizations that you're mentioning are broader St. Louis region. Is there anything that the city, you think, would really be beneficial for the city to provide?
It's to the point now when it comes, a lot of people ask, you know, what is the mayor doing? What is the congresswoman doing? Those different things like that. Understanding, yeah, we do have a crisis with the unhoused and homelessness, but we also have a crisis with the gun violence and also with the opioid addiction. So trying to battle all of those things and still stand out, the resources is the most valuable of them all. You know, you have these organizations that don't have the funding, that if it's not for us doing dinners, doing shows, doing outside events to get youth engaged, like Boys to Mentors, like the Corey Johnson Pool Program, if you don't have those different organizations, Show Me Arts Academy, the Whitfield Foundation, if you don't have those different types of organizations that's helping raise money, it's us that's doing it. But you study giving these huge organizations benefits, but a small grassroots organizations are the ones with the data, you know, to do these things. What about helping them? What about sitting us in a room and say, hey, we're going to, you know, donate a certain amount to you. We're going to donate a certain amount to you, and stop making us jump through all those loopholes. You see us.
Right.
This is what the news is reporting on us.
We're speaking with Erica Jones, who's founder of Voice of the Voiceless, STL, a nonprofit support group for those grieving lost ones, loved ones lost to gun violence. And we're also talking about her daughter, Whitney, who was killed in 2015 in a drive-by shooting. You've just mentioned the media. Mm-hmm. A reporting series called Unsolved has just come out this week. Mm-hmm. And you are here because of the loss that you suffered. Now, when Whitney was killed, you would call detectives mm-hmm. every 2 weeks for updates mm-hmm. about her case. Mm-hmm. Erica, what was it like in those early months talking with the police?
Honest opinion, it was full of crap. It was excuse, mm-hmm. excuse after excuse. Understand, Whitney wasn't killed by herself. Her friend Devin Fletcher lost his life as well. Mm-hmm. So it was not only Whitney and alone, it was eight others that was killed that day. Whitney and Devin so happened to be the last two killed that night. Mm. So trying to get them to answer, to respond to you, to get back to you, I felt they were lazy. I felt that a lot of calls went unanswered because of how much I called. It was avoidance. It was he's either out of the office, he's on vacation.
So these are the excuses.
Every time. Mm-hmm. Every time. I very, very seldomly, I probably can tell you how many times I talked to him on two hands.
Yeah. How did it make you feel to be trying to communicate with people who are not reciprocating at the very least or ignoring you at worst?
It was, I'm going to try to be pleasant. I felt like you should have lied. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would have felt a little bit better. Understanding and empathizing and also sympathizing with other families who might have just lost their child. Mm-hmm. But still the fact of, what are you doing? How much effort are you putting into this? You know, to so much that I'm meeting with higher ups to say, hey, what's the dragging of the feet? Why isn't he always gone or out of the office? Understanding that we have other murders throughout the city of St. Louis.
Right.
And by no means am I taken away from, you know, their losses. Mm-hmm. But we have two young people who were parents. Devin was a parent of a two-week-old mm-hmm. child at that time. Whitney was five.
Right.
You know, so us trying to hold on to any little bit of anything that you give us that matters, but you couldn't give me nothing.
Right.
Everything was always, we're looking. It's not going, you know, that we're not looking. It's just the time that, you know, we're putting into this. We have other murders. When he told me that, I was like, okay. What right. I mean, I had other choice words, but I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, the staffing issues was just one of the things that came out in the report that was done by St. Louis Public Radio, APM Reports, and the Marshall Project. And one of the other issues that was mentioned had to do with distrust. You know, police have long targeted and over-policed Black communities in St. Louis. Have you seen that lack of trust in your community and in Whitney's case? I mean, apart from the lack of response that you got as you were trying to follow up about what she was doing, is distrust also visible in other aspects?
I think it's visible all the way around the board. When it's in Black communities or whether it's in any community, you know, that is given, trying to understand where they are and trying to meet them halfway, but we're not getting the same respect. You know, those every Black kid is not the same. Every white kid is not the same. Every brown kid is not the same. But yet and still being able to be of law enforcement and not treat, you know, everyone the same, you know, or he's a criminal because he looked this way, or their favorite excuse, you fit the description. That shouldn't be the reason. Mm-hmm. You know, I really do wish they would go back. You know, when we were younger, having block parties, getting out, walking down, up and down the street, getting to know the, you know, the area that you patrol. You know, instead of just saying you fit the description or you look like the person that, you know, automatically assuming, you know, to stop them just to say, oh, you look like a person of interest. Every kid is not like that. Mm-hmm. You all have definitely dropped the ball. You definitely make it hard for youth, you know, to trust you or anyone to trust you because of the things that you've put out there. I feel like when you have police officers to cover up, knowing that that officer is not right, you just as worse as the person committing it.
So these systemic issues.
Definite.
So it's been nearly 9 years since your daughter Whitney was killed. And it is, it's crucial for there to be action around homicide investigations in the weeks immediately thereafter. And according to police records, of the homicides that were committed between 2020 and 2023, half of the closed cases were resolved within 15 days of the incident. We're talking just over 2 weeks. So with all this time that has passed, what are your hopes for there being some answers when it comes to what happened with your daughter?
I don't try to get my hopes up because it's going on 8 years this year. So I don't try to get my hopes up, but I pray, you know, asking God that before I leave this earth that we are able to get, you know, justice for my daughter, justice for Devin. Because we don't know. We don't know. Half of the people that was supposed to have been involved are now deceased, you know, so we don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But from what the detective told me, that if there is a person of interest, but they haven't called and said, hey, Ms. Jones, this person is alive or this person is deceased or we feel that it was this or we nothing, none whatsoever. We have a ton of cases of gunshot victims that have, even with the ones who have been shot and still lived, there's no prosecution, no justice. Something is crooked somewhere, and it makes it even harder because when it comes time to testify, somebody has either tampered with something, some witnesses have been threatened, witnesses have, you know, been lost, or nobody knows where they went, or it's always something negative, you know, and it's the police job to change the mind of the community, you know, to make them feel safe. But how can we feel safe against the ones that's supposed to protect us and they're not protecting us?
Erica, as we finish this conversation, I understand that you recently acquired a piece of Whitney's childhood. Tell us about that and how that is a part of how you keep Whitney's memory alive.
The house that Whitney grew up in, that I was first able to purchase when I was here, all Whitney friends used to come over, my daughter's, my other daughter's friends, my son's friends, and they used to sign her door. That door has it has to be over 200 names on it at most, probably even more than that. I stopped counting after 100, so that was a lot. With that being said, we wind up moving out of the house, and we wind up moving, and the door was left there. My son so happened to pass by the house, and I haven't lived in this home since 2012. At that time, we wind up, when we moved, the door was left. My son so happened to pass down the street in the city where we lived, and the door was still there. So my son knew the gentleman that bought the house and asked him if we can have the door.
Yeah.
So when I do find me or blessed with an office space, I definitely want to put that, you know, as a standpoint to show other youth, majority of those young people that is on that door,
is deceased.
Wow.
95% of them on that door is deceased from the time that they signed all the way up until now. 95% of them are deceased, including my daughter.
Well, it's a reminder of doors that are closed and maybe those that are yet to be opened to good things. Erica Jones is the founder of Voice of the Voiceless STL, a nonprofit support group for those grieving lost ones, loved ones lost to gun violence. Erica, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We need to take a quick break. Coming up, size inclusivity in fashion and a new thrift store in South St. Louis dedicated to clothing and centering people in bigger bodies. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Today's segment was produced by Aula Kuziz.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.